from Relay. This is Downstream, a podcast about the present and future of television. This is episode number 102, recorded September the 5th, 2025. I am your master of ceremonies, Jason Snell, and I'm joined by Joe Adalian of Vulture. Hi, Joe.
Hello, sir. Good to be back, as always.
That's good to have you, as
my
always.
My peppy introduction, like I'm selling you something.
Oh, yes, sir.
Would you like to buy some insurance or a used car, perhaps?
Nationwide is on my side. That's what I hear.
Yes. You are havoc or chaos or whatever the heck that guy's called.
Something
mayhem
like that. Yeah, exactly. So we talk about TV here. So let's get started.
Let's do it.
Paramount. You got Larry Ellison's kid running Paramount now, and you wrote a piece last month about sort of what comes next and what all the questions are. And I think it's a really good list of questions, and I'm going to run them by you and see what you think of them now, right? Like, this is...
I got to remind myself what I think.
Or just come up with something new, and nobody's going to check, and nobody's going to see. But you wrote a piece for Vulture about this. So, first question is, one of the hot trends... I have people asking me this about other companies that are not doing this yet. A hot trend of putting your cable channels on an ice flow and spinning it off into its own company that's your Versant... And this is the way you go, is you spin them all out there, which NBC and Warner Brothers are doing, and NBC, you know, NBC's changing MSNBC's name to something ridiculous. All that's going on. What about Paramount? Do they take MTV and their various other those Viacom cable channels that got stuffed back into the bag by Sherry Redstone when she was prepping her two big companies for sale? Do they play that game, do you think, of spinning out those depreciating cable assets?
You know, they've been hinting in their appearances with the press that that's not their plan. Who knows, though? I think, if anything, they were more likely to be a buyer than a seller.
Hmm.
Because Ellison and Dad have a lot of money.
They do.
They're pretty interested in Warner Brothers, according to reports, and lots of logic. There's lots of time. I remember back when he ran CBS, and we don't say his name in polite company, but it rhymes with Moonvest.
Mm-hmm.
There were always rumors of a Warner Brothers CBS sort of pair up. And now that the FC, and because in part there are no rules in terms of owning too many stations, although, because Warner Brothers didn't have stations, although the FCC now no longer cares about those sorts of monopolies. I would like to see them try to rework those brands. There's a lot of value in the brands. I think they suffered under the old regime because for the last 7 or 8 years, even before the most recent management, the mandate from on high was cut, 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 reduce, 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 retreat. And so MTV, Comedy Central, these sort of really iconic brands had Nickelodeon, obviously, and lesser brands like TV Land. And, they sort of were just completely blown apart. And, shows like, Emily in Paris could have is produced by Paramount, but it lives on Netflix, which was probably the right decision because of the audience and where cable is going. But rather than simply redesign these networks to appeal to the audience that is, they just retreated and not spending any money and sped up their death spiral. Now, can they be saved? I don't know. Cable bundle is a tricky thing right now, but I think there's still value. There are still 50 million people who are paying for cable. Give them a reason to keep paying for cable. Make it so, as Disney has done and some others, and Warner Brothers now, so that if you subscribe to the cable bundle, you get access to Paramount Plus at no extra cost. So you can watch where you want, see what you want across platforms, and those brands can live in both places. That, to me, would be ideal because I think Comedy Central could be a great way of serving younger viewers and people who like comedy, and combining, it may evolve from what it was when it was in the glory days of cable, because it's a different world, and Netflix spends a lot on comedy and other places as well, and YouTube is a popular place, so it can't just be 1990 again, or even 2010, but it can be something else. Same thing with MTV. This weekend, as we're taping, the MTV Video Music Awards are going to be aired on CBS, and not only that, but they're actually being presented by CBS. MTV's broadcast or telecast of it is labeled as a simulcast, and it's being downplayed and not even mentioned in all of the publicity. They're not even directing people to watch on MTV. They want you to watch on CBS, which, you know what? Okay, fine. Meet the viewers where they are. The MTV audience that likes music is an older generation X audience, and they're, you know, they'll watch wherever, but there's still value there. So to me, it's just about finding a new way of utilizing these cable assets. But it does require spending some money. And, you know, if they're going to spend $100 million to buy Barry Weiss's The Free Press, more on that later, spoiler, you know, they can spend some money to make some cost-effective shows and build the brand back up of MTV Comedy Central TV Land. Nickelodeon, I don't know. Kids right now is really a tough thing, but you know, there's still value in that brand to some degree.
Yeah, well, and do you want to, I think the targets are good, right? Like, do you want to play in the children's space? It's a good brand that you could maybe build on. Music content, maybe not what, like you said, what MTV was, but is there demand for music content? Yes, there is. So figure out how to do something with that. And comedy, I mean, Netflix has shown that comedy can drive a lot of viewership. And, you know, they have the Comedy Central brand, they have the Daily Show, like they have things they could do something with. All right, we'll see. I guess the flip side to that is how much money do you want to put in the depreciating cable asset? But then again, if your content is living on cable and it's also living on Paramount Plus, you know, does it matter?
If it's done right, it doesn't. You look at an example like Bravo. Bravo is a brand that is strong and thriving on Peacock and also lives on cable. And people watch it on cable, they watch it on Peacock.
And that's why they're keeping it.
And that's why they're keeping it as part of the company, and that's why they invest in it, and they never let that brand go away. Turner Classic Movies still works and actually needs more of a streaming presence, but it still works.
Yes.
Hallmark Channel, FX, another example. Disney wisely said there's something to FX, and even FXX, you know, right now in September, FXX, the little small, you know, mostly animated cable network now, animated comedies, there's The Simpsons, and they're going to be airing every week two episodes of the new excellent King of the Hill reboot. So for people who have not jumped into the bandwagon or
on
just
Hulu,
sort
right?
of want to watch, it's on Hulu, but it's going to air on FXX on linear every week. So all the episodes dropped in the beginning of August, and now they're living two at a time there. I hope that King of the Hill also will eventually go to ABC. There are ways to sort of to adjust to this, and other countries find a way to do this much better. They're in Britain, brands live across multiple platforms and they remain stronger, and you will have linear networks that will cater to, you know, will run marketing campaign towards people who are older. I last night discovered something called the Great Networks in the UK, and there are a series of channels that live on cable there, their version of cable, and live on streaming and over the air. And their marketing all is filled with people in Gen X and older. And remember how great TV was, the marketing says? It's like, here, are you tired of binging and remembering this and must-see TV? Just come on and watch our channels and relax, because people still want a lean-back experience.
You can watch the A-Team or something.
Literally, yes, or Diagnosis Murder. Uh-huh. But even people our age, you know, older Gen X people, you know, I think that, you know, don't give up the fight. People have absolutely, you can't go put the genie back in the bottle. We all don't sort of make appointments for TV in the same way we did, but we still, a lot of us have times where we watch TV. So why not give an option that's not scrolling through endless tiles, just turning on and going, oh, that's curated. And it can, anyway, I'll stop now.
All right, what about CBS, the broadcast network? Does it remain our like full service TV network that it's been up to now, or does it start shrinking and shrinking and shrinking? And because they've had success, they have more scripted than anybody else, but everybody else is collapsing into nothing but sports and reality and very small amount of scripted. So, you know, this is a decision that they need to make. It's what's the future of CBS as a broadcast network?
Right. And, you know, before the whole situation happened with the Late Show and Stephen Colbert, I would have said I had a lot of confidence in George Cheeks, who is remaining with the new company and running both broadcast and cable to keep CBS strong. He has, over the last 5 years that he's been in charge, sort of leaned into the fact that CBS has an audience and kept it up, and knows that the shows that he makes for CBS have value for Paramount Plus and internationally. Yeah. Now, the logic that he used in getting rid of Colbert was that a show like that doesn't have the same cross-platform value. And to some degree, he's right. But, you know, I still, and the decision was said, well, the way we afford to keep making scripted shows is getting rid of stuff where there isn't an upside. So, all right, let's play devil's advocate. I think that it was purely a financial decision. So what happens now? Well, let's see if he invests that money that he's saving on Colbert in keeping up shows like Matlock and Elsbeth and Fire Country. You know, I don't think they're going to dramatically cut back to the point that NBC and ABC have. But, you know, what Cheeks has shown, I think, in his decisions so far, both running CBS and CBS News, is that he's very eager to please his new bosses. Mm. You know, he preemptively, before they even had control, he gave them a decision that he knew that they would love, because it signaled something to the Trump administration. It signaled that he was, you know, not an old media guy sort of caught up in the idea that, you know, because it's the late night host, it has to stay. And because we're number one, that means we have to continue. So he sort of showed himself to be sort of a rule breaker, and that looks good. So will they continue to want to break more rules? And will they say, you know what, network TV is old, and, you know, David Ellison doesn't watch network TV. He's never cared about it. He's a movie guy, first of all, yeah. But he's of the age in his late 30s that he's never really been about network TV. Maybe when he was a kid a little bit, but you know, he was so rich, he just probably had private screenings of shows from DVD. So will they want to? I don't know, but I hope they do. And I think it would be a mistake to get rid of it.
This is an easy one. We can just blow by it pretty fast. I think is their theatrical strategy going to be and leaning into franchises. I think this is kind of easy because Skydance has already been playing in this space and is coming to the party, and they have said a lot about how excited they are about the various franchises that Paramount has control over. And they do seem to be enthusiastic about theatrical, because Skydance comes from being a company that produced theatrical releases, and now they can strategize those releases and then also get them on Paramount Plus. So I don't know. This one is the easiest question to me in some cases, because I feel like this is like the stuff they're already doing, and now they're just kind of like rubbing their hands together about getting a hold of other intellectual property that they can use with theatrical.
Sure. They did a big deal with the Stranger Things guys, mostly so they can make movies for theaters. Mm-hmm. I think they're doing Call of Duty. They got the rights to that. Am I right on that? Call of Duty, I think. I'm bad with my franchises, but I'm pretty sure it's Call of Duty.
I think so. That's the one where Steven Spielberg wanted to make it, but he wanted complete creative control, and they're like, nope.
And so it went to Paramount, because the video game manufacturer, so they're, but maybe it hasn't been announced. Yeah. Maybe it's just been rumored, but they're clearly making a play for it.
I know Skydance produced at least a couple of the J.J. Abrams Star Trek movies, and I know that that's a good example where this is going to blow your mind a little bit, Joe. We have gone the longest without a Star Trek movie ever, like longer than at any point since Star Trek the Motion Picture in 1979. This is the longest gap without a Star Trek movie. And
how long has it been?
Since Star Trek Beyond, so it's been like 12 years.
Wow. Because the original series was in what, 67?
Yeah.
Right?
So the and since they produced a couple of those, I would say that's a good example where you can see, and I read enough things about Star Trek, because I'm a lifelong Star Trek fan, to say that, like, it sounds like that's a good example of them looking at that that franchise and being like, well, why has there not been a movie? And it shows you the dysfunction of what was there. They have had like five different movies. They had Noah Hawley was going to do a movie, and then when that got killed, he went and he did Alien Earth instead. So I it's a good example where I just think they're salivating at all of these franchises.
Well, sure,
I want some money into it.
Right. I'm not a movie guy, but, you know, they didn't abandon Star Trek at all as a company. In fact, they leaned into it, and they used it to help build first CBS All Access
and then Paramount Plus. Yeah, it's on the movie side where they've been kind of paralyzed. Right. And for the last few years, it's also been that they're afraid to spend money because they're shopping the company. And I don't think Ellison is afraid to spend money.
Right. And I think that was part of it. I'm not trying to defend them but, you know, in some ways, maybe it's not a bad thing. Sometimes rest is good. You want to make sure you have the right creative in place. And also where box office has been the last 5 years. Well, can you imagine if launching a Star Trek movie into that universe might have been difficult? So now the new rules of what's acceptable, how much you can spend. I'm not trying to forgive. I think there was certainly a lot of penny pinching going on, a lot of creative dysfunction, and sort of the two sides. But, you know, they did create some good television franchises.
Oh, for sure.
You know,
sure.
And but maybe like Strange New Worlds is.
Yeah, Strange New Worlds is great. It's just it was a separate group who was handed the control of the films. And they sort of like just never could get one out. And I think they've identified that and some of their other intellectual property as just opportunities for them to get more stuff into theatrical. The Star Trek as a franchise has done pretty well. I mean, I could make the argument that Star Wars was always a movie franchise and Star Trek was always a TV franchise, and their crossovers were more kind of like luck and brand expansion than anything else. That's people can argue with me if right. So I think using it to start CBS All Access and bulk up Paramount has been a great success. And I think Star Trek is better on TV than movies, frankly. But I also think there's money to be made. Yeah.
And by the way, TV are the movies. Talk to Netflix. I mean, so I think if you create the right things, unfortunately, you know, and now they've also regenerated new characters and new ideas for maybe from some of that, from some of these shows, could the next movie franchise come about rather than start from over? I mean, best Star Trek movies were born from the TV shows, as opposed to starting from scratch. Right. No offense to Zachary Quinto and all of that. So from the current franchises, I mean, do you think Strange New Worlds? Do you think or what was set up, I think, in the final season of Picard?
Oh, well, if I'm running Star Trek, I don't know. I feel like Strange New Worlds is the best single thing that they've done this century. I mean,
on a movie of it
on the TV side. So you could, I mean, you've got, and you know, if the idea is that the general public only knows Kirk and Spock, I mean, the beauty of it is Strange New Worlds has Kirk and Spock along with some new characters, because it's set in that period right at the beginning. So if you wanted to tell a story about like the last days of Captain Pike's Enterprise or the first days of Captain Kirk's Enterprise, you could do that if you really wanted to. You know, they keep talking about bringing back Chris Pine and Zach Quinto too. So that's fine. Yeah. Whatever they want to do. But I think David Ellison is going to, I mean, and we talk about Star Trek here, but like, you know, there are other franchises that they have. Top Gun is one. It's like, they're not going to have trouble making another Top Gun movie. That's going to happen. Like I think they're definitely just going through the list of things they own and saying, how much money can we spend to get these things? It'll be interesting to see.
I can't wait for the Gen Z Godfather.
You just know, imagine.
Or Adam Brody, not Adam Brody. Who's the guy from Girls who was in Star Wars?
Oh,
the Driver. Long face. Yeah. Adam Driver. Adam Come Driver. On. Adam Driver.
He's Johnny Corleone, the great
exactly.
great grandson.
You know, I don't know something, but just, you know, wait until Mr. Coppola is gone and then just, you know, you have the rights.
Sweep right in.
You know, maybe get his daughter to sort of direct one. Who knows?
All right. How about what happens to Paramount Plus? Cindy Holland is in charge, formerly of Netflix. What is the? That's one of their questions. Is where do you go with Paramount Plus? Do you, you know, load it up with content? Do you merge it with another streamer? What do you think is they're thinking of there?
Well, they've indicated this, and I think the first thing they need to do is they need to make the app work better, and they need to make the app serviceable. Mm. You know, you need something that not only just functions more smoothly. They talk about, you know, back end and forget about AI, which I'm sure they'll be all excited about. I don't care. But the thing is, I think you need to find a way. One of the biggest problems of Paramount Plus is it doesn't adequately surface or show off everything that's offered there. Like, they have movies, and I have no idea they're there.
So one of the big sales pitches of David Ellison is, I'm bringing in tech people and we're going to fix this company from a technical standpoint. And while
Daddy's people, once again,
I kind of roll my eyes at that a little bit. Yeah, it's Larry's people. But I kind of roll my eyes at that. And at the same time, I am a believer in the fact that all of these companies, these legacy media companies, one of their greatest bits of point of failure, one of their greatest dysfunctional things is
what you're going to say.
They think in terms of content and not in terms of technology, even though they're building direct-to-consumer technology platforms. Well, and leaving aside all of the rest of it, if what he can do is create a little bit of a culture change that puts the technology forward, it's probably going to be good for them.
Right. I mean, in their defense, I will say, I think all of these companies long ago realized they need to invest in the back end. They just chose not to, because they figured the best way is through content spending. That's the best way to get subscribers. And then you maximize them. And I think there's some logic in that. Netflix, you know, had so much more of a head start, and they also sort of built their content first. They just built it and their algorithm, but they built it through DVD. So they had all that time and then they worked on
it.
Technology got better. But for sure now, and the thing is, it's incredibly expensive. Even at Netflix, which, you know, Netflix has driven up the value of engineers, but it costs a lot. Amazon, which has all the money in the world, still is awful with their user interface.
It's true.
So it costs a lot of money. I remember talking to someone at Paramount about 2 years ago and said, what are you going to do? Why aren't you figuring this? It's like, why are we going to spend all this money when we're just going to get bought anyway? And let them deal with the user interface. And he was sort of right. That's what the problem has been. And I think if you spend the money, absolutely it matters, because it's essential. And Netflix, the tech side is just as powerful as the content side, and they both weigh in and they war.
At the risk of sounding like a broken record, but because I've said this on this podcast many times before, but it's one of those things where it's like, they all know that the technology is important, but I think that there's a difference between admitting it and truly prioritizing and recognizing that it's a part of a key part of your strategy going forward. And if you look at the, you know, greatest successes in streaming, it's YouTube and Netflix, which I would say are tech companies, not entertainment companies. And even Netflix, which is a huge entertainment company, but it's also, it's got a tech mindset in a lot of ways. And I think this is one of the reasons that Disney has had more success in when they bought BAM from Major League Baseball, is they brought in some people who really are tech forward, and it changed the mindset a little bit. But it's just one of those things.
But they've struggled.
I think when there's trouble, and they did struggle, when there's trouble, I think a lot of these entertainment companies think at the end of the day, what we are and what we value is the content. And sometimes I think that can be a mistake, because it has led to a really lax attitude towards some of the technology side. So I hope that they fix that.
Yeah, I think they're aware of the problem. I think, but you're right, they haven't chose to spend with it. And I think their hands were tied, because in their defense, whereas Netflix and some of these other companies were encouraged by Wall Street to spend money like crazy to deficit finance everything, and were rewarded for it, in fact, as long as they showed subscriber growth. Well, not the case at Disney and all these other companies. They've been punished almost from the start. So for them to take that money, they would have had to, probably the only way to have spent that money would have been to drastically cut back on content at a time when Netflix was expanding. So it was sort of a tough decision. They still could have done better. Disney, I think, is starting to do better. I think their next iteration that combines Hulu and Disney Plus will be a lot better. I also, though, think at some point, though, what really should happen, I was talking to someone at a tech company who was thinking about, who's not Netflix, thinking about what really needs to happen, is that the Apples, probably not Amazon, but like Warner Brothers, Paramount, maybe Comcast, they should be working together on a single uniplatform that allows their services to be sort of put together and bundled as a cable thing, but then also individual. But if you could have one sort of mega platform, right, that allowed these companies, and it'd be tough because
everybody wants television.
Yeah, exactly, like cable. In other words, if they could get together and form their own cable company, their own version of Comcast, where these things get, you know, because your cable bundle, right? Your cable, you get cable or DirecTV or Dish. You know, there was a difference back for anyone. You might still have satellite, but if you went to DirecTV or Dish, for example, very different technologies. I mean, it's still satellite, but Dish innovated to try to compete by having its hopper. They rolled out DVRs and they had better user guides, right? All these conveniences that said, oh, you know what? Whatever, that made it easier. And how channels were arranged on there, they competed for, you know, high channels, you know, being up, you know, the first channels you saw, how they were grouped together. All those sorts of things were back-end functions. So if you had one sort of company that sort of focused on that, and collected the data and shared the data, you know, put a wall so that, you know, if you were Warner Brothers, you only got to see how your shows were doing, whatever.
I don't know if we're going to get one, but I think that is the end game goal of Google, Amazon, and Apple.
Yeah.
Is that they want everybody, you can buy it standalone, but I think they all ultimately want you to make, you could assemble your entire lineup by buying through one of those outlets, and then it would just be in their interface. And that may be where it goes.
But Apple is so far behind, and it's really disturbing and sad, because I think Apple, as we've talked before, has the best user interface, but they are, with their channel store, you know, I don't think they push aggressively enough.
No, they don't.
They've made their streaming player, which Maybe by the time you're listening to this, there will be a new Apple TV, but it probably won't be cheap enough. I don't know. But they haven't, they should make it priority. They could have long ago fulfilled, you know, supposedly Steve Jobs' dying prediction of I've got the TV, and finally do it because it's so much better. We've talked about this and it's, they should be in that business. And Apple TV Plus should be sort of that secret sauce that sort of holds it together. But we'll see. Instead, they're now licensing their stuff. They're putting their stuff on Amazon, which is just sad.
Okay, what happens to Pluto?
I don't know, man.
That's a good question. You were just asking the questions here. I don't know about the answer, but it's an asset they should probably keep and treasure in some way, right?
I worry they're going to do a freebie and sort of fold it into Paramount Plus.
Yeah, Paramount Plus, free channels, yeah.
But here's the thing. If they make it so that there's a robust sort of Paramount Plus free that operates that anyone can get to. And so just as easily as you can get Pluto, you can get that and still has a robust offering and you can still get that experience and it works great. Then fine. I don't care what you call it. There doesn't have to be a Pluto app because the Pluto app, by the way, is also archaic at this point. Pluto was ahead of its time 5-7 years ago, but now, you know, I've played around with Samsung TV Plus and I think it does a better job than Pluto. Mm-hmm. Pluto is overstuffed with content. It's hard to find stuff. It moves quick. You change channels quickly and I like the linear forward of it all, but it feels behind the time. So is there a way? Yes, but I feel like there still needs to be a free service that acts as a free service. And I think what News Corp has done with Tubi has been brilliant and perfect. Yeah. And I think people, you know, I don't know if people are going to buy like, oh, is it really free Paramount Plus? It's the same thing. And, by the way, just let people subscribe to upgrade on what Pluto to get Paramount Plus on Pluto or to get selection. I think they're going to try to save money and think they're smart, but I think they're just surrendering in the fast wars. And I think it's a mistake.
And the last question is what happens to CBS News?
Well, if there's a merger, do you want to offer more? I mean, we go through all the things that have happened over the last month or so.
I was just going to say, I think that they don't care. Like David Ellison doesn't care about CBS News. I think that probably large portions of CBS News lose money. I think that there are some valuable assets, but they don't have. They've got their little tiny, you know, CBS News streamer channel, but it's all very small. And it strikes me as being one of those things that's very high profile in certain circles because especially in the East Coast media business. But I think that you could also pretty dispassionately, if you're somebody who's coming in from the outside, say we're losing how much money. And
except I don't think CBS News is losing money as a unit. No, I know it's not. I mean, I know that 60 Minutes makes money.
So
I know
minutes
even the morning show,
money.
but all of that is dependent on having some sort of news operation. Now, do you need to have a nightly newscast? Maybe you don't. And maybe that's something thing where you find a way to do a deal with CNN and it's produced by CNN and maybe the world goes on. I get that. And they've already cut CBS News down so far that, well, I don't know. But the thing is, there is, if they ever got leaned into it, they still have that base of all. It's telling that CBS is so strong in primetime and remains so weak in news.
Yeah.
And that's because they've just never figured it out. So I don't think it's not ever a massive printing money operation. It never has been in terms of that, but it's not a money losing operation. I do think though, if these rumors of a merger with Warner Brothers happen, then sure, absolutely. You will see CBS News powered by CNN, and you will see 60 Minutes, you know, on CNN and CBS.
60 Minutes and the morning show, I have no doubt, are successful and profitable. The rest of the news gathering organization,
there's not much more. I think the streaming thing does make some sense because it's low cost and it feeds off of the local stations.
Local
so
stations.
It's all one thing.
Exactly.
And it's just a way of getting that fast. And they do very well. They get a lot of theft. 48 hours is also profitable in a big franchise. So you're really saying, yes, the nightly news, which is third place, is probably not printing money because it has not many viewers, but it also doesn't cost that much to make either. They've already eliminated all the star anchors long ago. They don't spend much on it. And it's done through the same division that does local news too. And so, I'm wary whenever they say, well, get rid of it. Is it essential as it was? No. And I would say that with all network news. But that's to the network's discredit. I think that network news could be a lot more essential because it still has far, far, far more viewers than CNN. Mm. People, 5-6 million people still watch, 7 million people watch ABC and NBC News. Yep. Even 4 to 5 million sometimes CBS watch it. So it's there. They watch the morning shows. They're, the audience is there. But, you know, and so Sunday morning does very well for CBS.
Yeah, right.
Also profitable.
Yeah.
It's a major center. So, you know, CBS News is healthy. Is it annoying? Are they full of themselves? Of course, network news divisions always have been. But they have reason to be upset because, you know, today as we're taping, word that, you know, CBS News now is going to no longer air taped interviews on Face the Nation because the Trump administration was upset that Face the Nation edited an interview with the Homeland Security chief where she lied. And, you know, honestly, you could argue, well, they should air the lies and then do pushbacks and packaging. But you know, Donald Trump is regularly interviewed on Fox News by tape, and his rambling is edited out to protect him. And there have been examples where that's been shown. News divisions have the right not to air the full interview. I, when I do an interview with someone for a story, am not going to write everything they said. So for them to say, well, you know what, we're now only going to do live interviews or live to tape, that's just signaling, yes, sir.
Yeah.
Yes,
oh, yeah.
sir. Whatever
For
you
sure.
want, sir.
For sure.
And then the idea, as we mentioned earlier, the idea that they're going to spend this money-losing division to spend $100 million on a site like the Free Press, mm-hmm. which was worth $15
million,
and put an opinion person who's never been a real journalist but is sort of an opinion writer in some, I don't believe that it's going to happen that she's going to have real power over CBS News.
No,
I think it's wrong.
I think it's a smoke screen and it's a political gesture and it's all of those
it's
things.
It's something, but you know, it's so that tells me not serious. But you know, it's sad days for the network of Murrow and Cronkite.
Those of us of a certain age remember when CBS was the Tiffany Network, right? It was the standard. We live in weird times. I mean, you live long enough, right? We were saying before it beats the alternative, but you live long enough and you see these institutions that you thought were almost unassailable, fall apart.
Right. In their defense, though, honestly, I think CBS News is no worse off, and in some ways is better off than NBC News or ABC News. I mean, ABC News, World News Tonight is just, you know, is fine, but it's there's no real depth there. Good Morning America is barely a news show. You know, the Today Show is not anywhere near what it used to be. It's a lot of fluff. NBC Nightly News is now just ABC News Lite, literally with an anchor from there. So, and their news magazines are just there to show true crime podcast on TV. So, you know, they've long ago, even before the internet had hollowed them out.
Oh, yeah.
And at least at CBS, they do have 60 Minutes. They do have Sunday Morning. These are serious, real shows that do good journalism. And that's something. But, you know, it's a shame.
Okay. I want to take a break before we continue on with this episode of Downstream, just to tell you something that's not a sponsor, but it's something that's very important to all of us here at Relay. Childhood Cancer Awareness Month is this month, and it's an opportunity for us to come together in the fight against childhood cancer. For the 7th year, the Relay community is rallying to support St. Jude, because together we can make a big impact. Before St. Jude opened in 1962, childhood cancer was largely considered incurable. Today, thanks in part to better therapies that St. Jude has helped to develop, more than 80% of U.S. childhood cancer patients survive. St. Jude cares for some of the world's sickest children, regardless of their race, ethnicity, beliefs, or, and this is important, ability to pay. Its patients receive the customized care they need to treat childhood cancer and other life-threatening diseases, no matter what barriers they face. And it's because of its supporters that St. Jude can provide children with cutting-edge treatments not covered by insurance at no cost to families. We're inviting the Relay community to continue the incredible generosity shown over the last 7 years and once again make a donation to support the life-saving mission of St. Jude. Donors making an individual gift of just $60 or more will be eligible to redeem a digital bundle of campaign-themed wallpapers and screensaver. I've seen the screensaver. It's amazing. And donors making a gift of $100 or more can redeem the 2025 sticker pack featuring 6 all-new host stickers. Please go to stjude.org/relay where you can make a donation today. Help give them more tomorrows. Go to stjude.org/relay to donate or start your own fundraiser today. All right, before we go, A couple things we like to do is TV picks and letters from listeners. I'll start with the letters from the listeners, and then we'll do some quick TV picks. Listener Dan wrote in and said on the August 22nd episode, you were discussing the possibility of getting all your sports via streaming. This is me. You didn't discuss the NCAA basketball tournament. Do you not care about the NCAA basketball tournament? Strangely accusatory here. I'm not a huge college basketball fan. I mean, it's fine. But as I mentioned, all that stuff's on CBS and TBS, which means it's all going to be on Paramount Plus and HBO Max. So the whole thing will be there. And then we'll see, just to follow up again, Fubo just launched Fubo Sports, which is their skinny bundle. It's $56 a month. I'm currently paying them $95 a month, but it's limited. And the question is, like, can you get the skinny bundle? And then do you have to pay and can you pay more to get your like local regional sports network? Or would I just not worry about it and get the Giants through MLB instead? Because you can do that now as a streaming subscriber. I'm still working through it all. But I will say this, because as my family looks at me kind of like with a raised eyebrow, I am experimenting and open to continue experimenting with this to find out if I can navigate the streaming only, you know, not using a regular cable satellite or MVPD to do this. So we'll see. Fubo Sports might be a way for me to do it if I don't want to go, because that includes ESPN, for example, and it's got a bunch of other channels on there. We'll see. And Steven wrote in and said, hi, Jason, a great option for the rare cable only game you come across would be buying a day pass to Sling TV. It's cheaper at $5 than paying for a month of Sling or Fubo. Now, I was saying I did this for the baseball playoffs, but now all those playoffs that were on TBS are also on HBO Max, so I could see it there. But there's a lawsuit now saying that I think Disney said that Sling is not allowed per the terms of their agreement to sell anything less than a monthly subscription. So this may be litigated.
Oh boy.
I think the question is, is Sling willing to pay them for a month, even if they only charge a person for a day, or if they can prorate it, or if they're allowed? And anyway, yada, yada, yada. We'll see. I continue to explore. So thank you, listeners, for writing in and That's a different podcast. Downstreamfeedback.com if you would like to send in your own thoughts about this or anything else.
Yeah, the thing with those Sling day passes is you don't get every channel in there that you might normally. So like some of the, like the broad, if it's on a broadcast, it's network, it's not going to be on that day pass. So yeah,
it's tricky. But I do think that with the launch of ESPN and Fox One, I can probably get to a place where I get everything. But this is the thing, it's sports, because Jeopardy's taken care of now. And so it's sports. That's the other thing that's at, kind of out there. And they've got deals for most of the locals. And the one network that they don't have locals for is NBC. But Peacock has all the NBC locals content, I think. But there's some questions about it. So I'm working on it.
I'm working here.
Yeah, let's do some TV picks. Do you have a TV pick for me?
I do. I like your TV pick. I'm just going to not put the preempt it. I won't ruin the surprise. Okay. But, you know, I recently got, I think we've talked before on the show, I love me some BritBox and Acorn TV.
Yeah.
And Acorn TV has a show that is not really a stereotypical Acorn TV show. It's not a cozy show made in Britain. It sort of tapes in Canada and Ireland, and it's got the heart of an American show, because it stars, first of all, Alicia Silverstone from Clueless. Wow. But not in a purely comedic role at all. She's all grown up. She's a woman whose dad leaves her when she's young, and is now she goes to Ireland to find out what happened. It's a whole thing. I won't ruin it. But it's six episodes. It's tight, six episodes. It's a little corny in places. It some ways feels like it would be just as much at home on Hallmark as on Acorn. But I like the fact that Acorn is stretching its brand a little bit. I'm liking the fact that there's a lot of great Irish scenery. There's some great Irish supporting players and actors that I get to watch on the show. It's sort of a fun hang show, but with a little crime mystery involved, and seeing Alicia Silverstone say the F word a lot. I'm not going to nominate this show for an Emmy. I'm not going to say you need to rush out and get Acorn TV to watch it. But if you do have Acorn TV, check out this show. It's a fun show. And it's also, the first episode's also on AMC Plus. If you subscribe to AMC Plus, you can check it out.
Very nice. All right. My Joe Adalian endorsed, by the way, TV pick is Platonic on Apple TV Plus. Second season is coming out now. I'm still making my way through the first season, which I didn't,
same.
I didn't get to, but I've same. Gotten to it now. So yes. Everybody knows that Seth Rogen is in the studio on Apple TV Plus, but what may not be known to many of you is that he had another Apple TV Plus show before that, a sitcom called Platonic, in which he and Rose Byrne are two former friends who are now in their 40s and reconnect, not romantically, it's in the name of the show, people, it's Platonic, but reconnect. He is kind of, I mean, it's Seth Rogen. He Seth Rogen at his Seth Rogeniest. I was saying to Lauren while we were watching the show that it's like, you know what? He can be a rich guy running a studio, or it could be a schlub bartender, and it's still like Seth Rogen. It's pretty great. He has range of a sort, but it's not that kind of range. It's a different kind of range. Anyway, very funny. He's a guy who's like working at a bar. He and his buddies are setting up a brew pub. But he's like kind of an extended adolescent, just broke up with his girlfriend. She's kind of moving on with her life and becoming an adult, and he is still he's a 40-year-old non-adult. And then Rose Byrne, who was a lawyer who has stopped being a lawyer to have and take care of her kids as her husband kind of progresses through the lawyer track that she could have chosen to stay on and chose not to. So she's a suburban mom in LA, essentially. And these two reconnect, and they're from different worlds, and they both are kind of like bringing their own baggage with them to the friendship, but also kind of questioning things about their lives because of it. And also, it's just funny. It's a really funny show. So it's very sweet and funny. And not Seth Rogen's not for everybody, but God, I love that guy. I think he's just hilarious.
You know, I've never been a Seth Rogen guy, but this year I became one.
Yeah.
Because he's been great in the studio. And I mean, he was great in Freaks and Geeks. I didn't dislike him, but I was never like rushing out to see his movies. They were fine. He's sort of the man child type thing.
Yeah.
A little cousin of Adam Sandler in his own way. Canadian version. He is Canadian, is he not?
He is,
I believe
yes.
So. Yeah. But I'm also about 7 or 8 episodes into season one. I'm sort of taking it with my patented Joe Italian slow binge. I watch one episode a week.
Yep.
And I absolutely love it. I absolutely love it. And it's very funny, very well done. And you know, can't wait for season two, which I'm deciding whether I take a little break, but I may just keep going
The beauty with the slow binge is you can create your own season break whenever you want.
Exactly.
And then bring it back. I've got a couple shows like that where we watched a season and I'm like, okay, we're gonna wait a little bit and then we'll go to the next season.
And another good show for that I'm actually enjoying on Netflix is Leanne, which is a Chuck Lorre comedy. Did I mention this the last time? I forget.
I don't know.
This is another thing, but it's got 16 episodes for the first season. Can you believe it? And they're also way too short. Yeah, 16. They basically must have just ordered 2 seasons at once and put it all at once, which I think is a waste, but whatever. But on the other hand, it's something that I can now go like 1 or 2 times a week and just, and this episodes like are strangely short, even though it's for streaming, they're like 19 minutes. Huh. It's like, but they're ready for to be on cable, I guess, in a few years if they want to.
Wow.
But it's got Kirsten Johnson from Third Rock from the Sun. It's got, I think it's Diedrich Bader, one of the people from the Drew Carey Show.
Wow.
Maybe not Diedrich Bader, maybe the other guy. I forgot which one. But and it's got one of the someone from Alice, the last flow. She's not, or this middle flow, who replaced Polly Holiday,
sure.
As one of those, but she's on it too. So a lot of sitcom veterans with a newbie, Leanne, who's a stand-up person,
Leanne Morgan,
doing her, Leanne Morgan, who's doing sort of her, you know, Roseanne sort of Brett Butler stand-up.
Ryan Stiles is in it.
That's the one from,
Whose Line Is It Anyway?
And it's so basic. It's so Chuck Lorre, but you know what? It's funny. I mean, everyone overacts. Like, the faces, like, I don't know what Kirsten Johnson is doing with her face, but she's like in a race to see if she can have more emotive faces than Leanne. Like, maybe she's trying to match it. And it's like, what's going on with the face? Is one of my friends said, Diane Morgan, who does the Surf Report podcast. You should listen to that. It's funny. It's just, it's a woman starting over after a divorce because the man you just mentioned, he just cheats on her with a younger woman. Duh being that's stereotypical and cliched, but it works. And I love having the episodes to go back to when I want to.
That's really nice. A little bonus TV pick there.
I know. I didn't mean that, but it just came out.
One of our things that we just sort of generally a TV pick is shows with lots of episodes. I like that. I just saw they did a little teaser trailer for The Pitt season 2. And I'm reminded that, you know, what does it feel like to have a big, what was it, 15 episode run over 15 weeks? And then a year later, they'll do it again. So, like, there'll be 15 more episodes. What is, I mean, it's like the old days.
I know. The only thing I wish they would do, and maybe they'll do it for season three, because you know the show's coming back for season three. And first of all, we only have 4 months to go because it's coming back in January. Can you believe it? We just said goodbye. Now it's coming back.
Really happy.
But I would love them to see them do a Christmas special. Maybe I've said this before. But there should totally be, have an episode on Christmas Day or right before Christmas. Have it out there in the world. Let it be a standalone, right? Yeah. Let it not be connected to the season.
Maybe one or two hours
or 90 minute,
special.
Whatever it is, right? And just have it be a night in the and it doesn't even have to be on Christmas. It could be a thing, whatever. But I mean, it should be. But you know, if it's a Christmas special, I guess it really should be a Christmas. Yeah. But yeah, and that can serve as a promotion for the real season.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful idea. All right, that brings us to the end of this show. If you are not a Downstream Plus subscriber, you missed us talking about K-pop Demon Hunters, Wheel of Fortune and Jeopardy finally being on streaming, Sesame Street, Apple raising the TV Plus price, and the paper switching from a weekly to a binge drop. You can get every other episode-ish. Sometimes they're two in a row. Sometimes we go a little gap. There are reasons. But some of the time, most of the show is available just for supporters. If you want to be a supporter, go to downstream.plus and you'll get full versions of every single episode, plus access to the Relay Discord, where there are a lot of very nice people. There are no ads in that version. Bonus shows from Relay, a whole lot more. If you have a question or suggestion for us, visit downstreamfeedback.com. Love to your mothers. This is September, so just before we go, I got to throw this in there. It's Childhood Cancer Awareness Month, and we are raising money for the kids at St. Jude. I will be on the Relay Podcastathon in Memphis at St. Jude in a couple of weeks. But if you would like to help us and support this cause, go to stjude.org/relay. I would really appreciate it. You can find me at sixcolors.com and, of course, many podcasts here at Relay and the Incomparable Joe. The Buffering newsletter is free, and where can people find that and you?
You can find that Google Buffering newsletter, Vulture, or it's on vulture.com. And I hang out socially at Blue Sky under TV Mojo, MOJOE.
TV MOJOE, indeed. All right. We'll be back in a couple of weeks, probably talking sports. I'm probably going to be in Tennessee for that. We'll see. We're going to figure it out. But that is it, Joe. It's been a pleasure as always. And thanks to everybody out there for listening. See you next time.